stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we thank you for joining us Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests and their websites. We do not reinvent the wheel, because the wheel's already been invented. All we do is point you in the right direction so that it's rolling towards you and what you're looking to do and accomplish in your life. So we ask you to go to their website and see what they have to offer. As again, we say, it's a smorgasbord, and you pick and choose what you want that works for you, that resonates with you, and we hope that it does and helps you to move forward in your life and your life's purpose. We have in studio today a local who is here to help you in your relationships in more ways than one. And we're very pleased to have Terry Cooper, marriage and family therapist, in studio with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
It is an area that we don't get into very often, even though we talk about relating one-on-one and in groups and in our office spaces and so forth. But it is those primary relationships that we go home to, that we leave home, if you will, and so forth, that sometimes make the rest of our lives more challenging, or that actually make the rest of our lives even less challenging and more fun, because maybe we're having a great time at home, but we love going, let's say, to work because we love our jobs. We've say, found our purpose and so forth. And the other person hasn't really clicked yet with that. And it makes it a bit challenging because it's like, well, should I then feel guilty for loving the job that I do because the other person is not real thrilled with what they're doing and they're miserable and so forth? And, you know, that kind of dynamic goes on all the time, you know, back and forth. So we want to talk a little bit about that, but we also want to talk about some of the methods that you use, some of the means by which you facilitate, and I think that's probably the best word to use,
yes,
is that you actually you don't cure anybody, you don't actually help anybody in that sense. You facilitate their healing, right?
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the modalities. That was the word I was searching for, the different modalities that you use. One of them that I am familiar with, I believe this is one that you use, is the tapping method. Is that correct?
Yes.
I know there's another acronym for it.
Well, it goes by a lot of different names. Meridian therapy, tapping therapy. Oh, there's a number of names, and it's gone through a number of transitions. But it's a technique that embraces the idea that you have energy that, in the same way that an acupuncturist or an acupressurist would look at places in the body which, when a pressure or a needle, in the case of acupuncture, is applied to, you'll have shifts in the energy field.
Mm-hmm.
And in that shift will come clarity and clearing of what is troubling you, and clarity as to where to go. And it's a simple technique, yet very, very powerful. And energy psychology has become enormous. It started off very small with this one technique of tapping. But now there's an entire field of energy work and different modalities, different ways of applying, if you will, pressure to points in different sequences with different wording. And they have energy psychology conferences now.
Wow.
So it's really come a long way. It's worldwide. And the process is used very effectively in high trauma areas. It's used for folks who have suffered trauma, who have in war zones. It's used in places where people have suffered severe emotional trauma, as well as helping people to solve everyday issues. It's amazing to me when I see that somebody who is addicted, for example, to cigarettes, and we're taught that nicotine is the most addictive substance in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be more addictive than heroin.
Yeah.
And yet, if I use this tapping process with somebody who is just about to light a cigarette, and I say to them, I bet in 5 minutes I can get you to not want that cigarette, and they look at me like I'm crazy, and they say, I'll take that bet. And then after a couple of rounds of tapping on these various points in this particular algorithm that's been evolved, they'll say, well, I could have it. I just don't want it now.
Yeah.
And it's quite astonishing. So it has many, many uses. I wanted to address something that you said when you were opening up the conversation about having relationships with other people. As a clinician, my focus is on the primary relationship, the internal one, the intrapsychic relationship. You can only bring to the table what's going on in your head, in your heart, and in your emotions. So all healing has to start with yourself, because we can't blame things on other people, even if their behavior is not what we would call appropriate or right, and we'd get a lot of agreement for that. If there is a part of us that has unresolved issues that have resonated at a very, very high level of response. In other words, we get triggered. And it's important to look at what is it that's triggering us so that we have appropriate responses to things. So again, to reiterate what you began with, the relationship that's most important is the one that you have with yourself and those aspects of you that hold your thought processes, your memories, and your emotions.
And I actually had the privilege of interviewing, for example, when we talked about the tapping method, the founder, if you will. He wasn't. The way that I perceive folks like this is that they don't actually create anything; they discover things. And in this case, I believe it was, his name is Nick Ortner, I think.
No, Ortman. Nick wasn't the originator.
No, he was not. Well, he was the one I interviewed in regards to the tapping method.
Yeah, he's one that's really brought it to the forefront in the media.
He's put it in the mainstream.
He's really brought it into the mainstream. The person who originally created it, it was named Gallo. After him came Gary Craig. And Gary Craig is the one who brought it to clinicians and brought it into the therapy world.
Right.
Nick Ortner brought it into the marketplace.
Along the same lines, and I don't know the history, the real specific history of, for example, Reiki, but I know that it comes from the Orient. It comes from Asia and has been transmitted. And there are all kinds of rules and this and that and the other. And I just happen to be a Reiki master. This whole aspect that you're talking about in terms of these pressure points and this energy work that is becoming more and more in the mainstream, it's being more and more accepted. The more I have thought about it over the years, the more it just makes sense, because science has said that, you know, we are electromagnetic machines, if you will. The physical body is an electromagnetic machine.
Exactly.
It means that there is electricity flowing through the body.
That's right.
Maybe not at high voltage.
Measurable and mutable.
Exactly. And it's not necessarily high voltages.
No.
But it is enough that keeps us animated. It keeps us moving. It keeps us functioning. And in many instances, for example, with the experiences some people have of these out-of-body or near-death experiences, there will be those who will say that these people, oh, that was just the synapses that were firing and they were memories from, you know, other parts of their lives and on and on. And I don't like that when people discount someone's experiences. I can't do that with people. It's like, that was your experience. I'm curious about it.
Well, there's the scientific model.
Yeah.
That if it isn't provable and tangible and concrete, it isn't valid.
Yeah. Well, and I have a problem with that in regards to Chinese medicine. Been around for 5,000 years.
That's correct.
And it works.
Of course it works.
It just works.
Of course it works.
Yeah, it's
of
amazing.
It works. And I'm so pleased that we live in a town and in a state. I don't know that they would have the kind of acceptance, let's say, in Iowa or Michigan,
Texas.
You know, Texas, places like that.
Yeah.
Where they're not embracing those modalities, where they're just doing traditional Western medicine. So it makes my job as a transpersonal psychotherapist who embraces the spiritual and the transpersonal aspects of people more acceptable. I don't think I could practice the way that I do in some of those other places that have no exposure and no openness to it. So I'm very grateful to be here to do the kind of work I do.
And the image that I get is of this gentle wave that goes from west to east across the country. And it may very well be very slow. And of course, there are going to be those pockets throughout the country.
And yet sometimes there can be an explosion. There was a book called Out on a Limb by Shirley MacLaine. Remember that book?
I do.
She was the one who introduced some of these Eastern concepts and these Far Eastern concepts to us.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was who she was at the time, people were reading her book because it was by Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah.
And I think that there are moments when somebody who we admire or respect opens up that field for us, sets a precedent, and then suddenly we become aware in a way we haven't been before.
Yeah.
And on a mass level, it becomes a zeitgeist.
Yeah.
It's what's happening. Yeah.
That particular word is fascinating. There's also a movie by that name. I think there are a couple of them out now.
Yes, there are. Lots of good
that
movies.
Just go through some incredible information that it's like, well, I already knew all that, but it's the way that they put these things together, and it's fascinating. Now, in terms of the other modalities that you utilize, we talked about the tapping method and so forth. What are some of the other elements? I'm curious, do you use any form of hypnotism?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I use a lot of clinical modalities, traditional and not traditional. And the non-traditional are the transpersonal aspect. And that's really what I was excited to talk to you about today,
okay,
is the transpersonal aspect of the work that embraces the spirituality and the divine conscious connection between that which exists within that finite field or that which connects us to the infinite field. And the kind of work that I do is a combination of the traditional clinical modalities and expertise and the transpersonal, meaning that I use my intuition in ways that the average clinician simply has not developed. Now, we do have some people in town that would call themselves psychics, and we have people who are practicing Eastern medicine, and we have traditional clinicians. I like to think that what I do is a really perfect combination of all of those, and it makes for a unique and a highly productive clinical session. I mean, what I usually hear from people who come to see me for the first time is, I got more done here in one day than I've done in 6 months of traditional therapy. And that's because we're able to move into deeper levels and more accurate assessment and more apropos interventions than in traditional clinical therapy, because I have skills that allow me to introspect, if you will, to go into the psyche and the emotions of my client, pulling out exactly what we need to look at, and then with the help of what I call guidance, getting the right intervention that will be appropriate for that client, as opposed to hoping something works and then finding out when it doesn't, what resistance the client had or why it doesn't work for them. So it's a very satisfying way of working because for me, I like to see results. I like to see results right away. I remember going to therapy most of my life, being in therapy, because I've always been interested in psychology. And people would say, well, how's therapy going? And I'd say, well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm still going. I'm still going. And I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
But I had no concrete answer.
Yeah.
But when I work with somebody and I have the ability to go in and find out exactly what they need to look at, what the etiology or the origin of something was, and what we can do to fix it, they're going to walk out with knowledge, insight, and tools that are going to make a difference right from the very beginning.
So you rely, I want to say, a great deal of the time, 90% of the time, 100% of the time on your intuition when it comes to what modality you're going to utilize with a particular client?
There are some clients who are not interested or open to that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
Either they're very left brain oriented, very concretized, very concrete in their thinking, or their religion is not comfortable with that kind of work. And so for those folks, I don't use that skill. Or if I do, I don't share that I'm using it. But a lot of folks come to see me because they want those skills integrated. So when that happens, I let the flow come. I trust that those intuitive senses have as their foundation and underpinning all the clinical knowledge that I have. And the more I learn, the more clinical modalities I learn, the more understanding I have of the working of the psyche, the more of a choice my guidance can make as to what to choose to do. So in answer to your question, how often do I use it or how much do I use it? I don't know. It's so integrated at this point that it seems to just flow. What part of it is this and what part of it is that? It just flows together.
Interesting.
Is it? Do you find it interesting?
Very much so, because it sounds to me like what you're doing with each of these modalities, it's like those points on a circle, and each modality is a point. And every time you move along that circle, you get a different view, a different perspective, as you just shared, of the psyche that, again, gives you greater insight. And again, we're not talking necessarily and specifically about a specific person, but the psyche in general, because everyone's psychological makeup is generally the same. Obviously, we're all individuals, but in a general sense.
Well, we carry emotions. We all carry we carry fear. We carry trauma. We carry creativity. We carry joy. You know, we're human beings and we have the same characteristics. What causes something in one person may not be what causes it in another.
Yeah.
You know,
the triggers are all different.
It's what triggers us. Exactly. The triggers are different in the way we perceive.
What's your thought on, and it's interesting the way you brought this up. It was like the 80s was like the birth of it's mom and dad's fault. And then in the 90s, we started to shift a little bit more into taking greater responsibility for our own place.
Yeah.
And it's carried over into now what you're doing in here in the 21st century, saying, look, it's not their fault and it isn't even my fault. And it's like getting away from the whole blaming thing. This is just the way things, it's like the sky is blue. That's neither good nor bad. It just is. I have fears about certain things. That's not neither good nor bad. It's just, that just is. And that's kind of where we are today, I think.
You know, want to address something that you said about, you know, we used to blame it on our parents.
Yeah.
Mostly we blamed it on our mothers.
Yeah.
And we had a name for that when I was going to school. It was called schizophrenogenic mothers. Blame it on mom.
Yeah.
And I want to share an example of the integration with that particular blame it on mom.
Mm-hmm.
I had a young man who was very smart, and he was going to college, and he was taking a physics class, and he came in complaining that his mother had so undermined him that he couldn't do his homework. He was resistant to doing his homework, and he knew it was because of something his mother had done to undermine his confidence.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And that was right along that paradigm of, you know, it's mom's fault. And I got a sense that what he needed to do was talk to that inner child, if you're familiar with that concept, which is another way of saying talk to the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him to do this, and he looked at me. Of course, he's very left-brained, and I'm telling him to talk to his inner child. So he humors me, and he comes back looking kind of sheepish the next week, and he says, well, you know, I was feeling that resistance to doing my homework. And I said, okay, let's try what this silly therapist told me to do. And he said he had a conversation in writing with both hands. It's called non-dominant and dominant handwriting. And his kid, his inner kid, that's a shorthand for the inner child, right, said, I'm tired. I want to take a nap. And he said, okay. He went and he lay down for half an hour, and he got up, and he did his homework for 4 hours.
Wow. Wow.
Done. Issue done. Okay? Issue done.
Yeah.
Okay? So we could have gone on forever trying to convince him his mother wasn't at fault.
Yeah.
But the modalities that we have now introduce us to the idea that we can have communication with those vulnerable, wounded parts of ourselves. And in that connection, we can do therapeutic things, healing things, that will actually make a difference. There's a woman named Claudia Black. She's called the mother of the adult child of alcoholics movement. And she has a saying, a phrase, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. And I think that's the best thing I've heard in psychotherapy since I am aware of psychotherapy. What it means is you can rebuild and restructure and reimage and reinvent an interior world where you get the nurturing and the encouragement that you need, and literally build that child that you were into a child that has had what it needed and then can give you as an adult all that you need to prosper and thrive.
So when you look back on some of the therapeutic methods that, as we've been talking about in the 80s and 90s and so forth, I remember when I started looking back at those things at the turn of the century in many interviews that I did, I thought, my gosh, how silly that is. But it seems to me that we had to kind of go through those phases to get to this point where we begin to realize that, I mean, one of the thoughts that came to my mind was of viewing a particular childhood trauma, if you will, from a different perspective that then changes the emotion about that trauma and may or may not, and may heal that resistance in the present day as an adult.
Yeah, it's called cognitive restructuring. We go in and we take the existing story, which has been running us, if you will, take something from the old Star Trek. You know, we've created this machine that's programmed, and it keeps spitting out the same information. And at the time, it was very useful. It kept us safe. It kept us protected from perhaps dysfunctional life at home. Now it's maladaptive. Now it blocks us. Now it keeps us from evolving. It keeps us in that prison of self-protection, that defense mechanism, if you will. And going in and changing that interior gives a person permission to drop those old defenses and discover ways of living more comfortably in the world. Yeah. And that's very empowering. It's very encouraging to watch my clients blossom, if you will, to come out. And may I give you another example?
Please.
I had a client who was and is, but well, she's some things and she's not some things now. She's Black. That's a constant. She was blind. She was poor. And she lived with a drunken father and no mother. She grew up, as she told me, with broken windows, cold, listening to rats scuttling around and not knowing where they were, not knowing if she was going to eat, not feeling safe going to sleep, because she didn't know who was going to come into the room. And she was a pretty angry lady when I met her. And what we did is we did some cognitive restructuring and some healing of the inner child. I created with her a place inside that was a different room. This room had a mother. This room had the things in it she wanted, which was a canopy bed. Her belly was full of food. The doors were locked from inside so she could feel safe. And she used that imagery. And when she started to use that imagery, this woman blossomed. She became warm and open. She now teaches music to sighted people. She sings. She plays professionally. And she's a happy woman. I don't know how long it would have taken me with traditional therapy to clear that trauma for her, if we ever could have.
Yeah.
But by changing the inner world, we changed her ground, if you will, from where she came. So we literally restructured the past. And that's not an intuitive skill. It's cognitive restructuring.
Sure.
It is one of the things that I work with. So it's never really too late to change the inner programming, the inner reactions.
Very interesting. And I remember, and this is sort of related. I remember going when I was in college, in junior college, and I took I think it was just one semester of psychology, and I didn't do so well, but I still enjoyed the class because it was fascinating to me to learn about these different methods of viewing the psyche, of how these different methods had come about from the different philosophies, if you will. That was always interesting to me to, as I grew and I, in the late 80s, early 90s, became a part of a group of people I went through a program actually in 1980 that was similar to a program called EST, which more people are familiar with than what I went through, which was called LifeSpring.
Yeah, I liked LifeSpring. At least it let you go to the bathroom. Yes, training. Yeah, how to become a camel.
Yeah, really.
That was a tough training. But I tell you, I loved it. It transformed me. It empowered me.
I have to say that it did some things for me that I am very grateful for. Mm-hmm. I believe it or not, I still have the workbooks. I still have the large, I can't remember, it's just this big sheet of paper that we wrote on, that I wrote on and so forth and so on. And then in the 90s, I went through another series of programs that were similar. It was called, at the time it was called Omega Vector, has been renamed called Delta Vector. And it was, its focus is on the teachings, the philosophy of Desjardins and the zero point and so on and so forth. And I was involved with that with them for probably a good 8 or 10 years. Went through the first and second, third. Matter of fact, the first time I went through that program, which was funny that I forgot about LifeSpring, it was my first wife who wanted me to do this because she didn't have anybody else that could take her. So I said, okay, I'll go with you, as if I was just going to be an observer.
Well, there's no accidents,
no,
Richard.
No, there are no accidents. That is also one of the phrases that came out of those programs that I got from the very first day, but that frustrated a lot of folks. And the statement was made when we were all in sort of a frustrated position at that point in the training. And they said to us, if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be. You are, so you must want to be here. Well, nobody got up and walked out. And so wherever you are, as the old, it's not quite the old saying, wherever you are, that's where you are. No, mm-hmm. Wherever you are is where you wanted to be, or you would have been somewhere else.
Well, that presupposes that there's nothing beside free will. And I think there is predestination, there is a grand plan, there's also free will that takes us from moment to moment where we are.
And those are the incredible paradoxes we deal with on a regular basis.
That's right.
Because we talk about trying to find our purpose, and we're going to talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be back with Terry Cooper in just a moment. And we're back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm here with Terry Cooper. She is a marriage and family therapist here in Santa Barbara, California. And before we continue on, I want to give you an opportunity to share with us how people can get in touch with you if what they're hearing is something that they feel like, this might help me. This lady and what she's talking about and what she's doing and the stories she's sharing, I'd like to have that happen in my life. How could they get in touch with you?
Well, they can reach me either by email at Terry Cooper, that's TerriCooper at Verizon.net. Mm-hmm. I am in the process of creating a website for therapy. You know, Richard, I've never created one before. I never needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Word of mouth has always kept me in a busy practice.
Right.
And now I'm coming into finally the world of media and the
right.
Twitters and the Instagrams and, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like a technological prehistoric, you know. And so I'm finally saying it's time for you to put together a website.
Yeah.
But they can reach me at 805-682-3025. Or on email. And they can also experience me at the Center for Lifelong Learning, which is the new transmutation. That's a Christian word, isn't it? Or isn't that a Catholic word? Not transmutation. What's the word for it? CLL is the new adult ed. That's
uh-huh.
what I want to say.
Go. There you go.
And I teach there, and I have some courses coming up in past life.
Mm-hmm.
Workshop where you get to explore a past life you might have had. And I lead you through that and talk about reincarnation, which is believed by more than half the world,
yeah.
but not so much in the Western world. And this is exposing folks to the thinking and the theories of reincarnation. And then an actual past life regression. I lead them through. And then the last hour, I will do past life readings. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what brings people in, is the chance to get the reading.
Yeah.
And I will also be teaching the art of mediumship, which is talking to spirit people who have passed on and want to communicate with those who attend the class. And the same structure is there.
Quick question on that. And then we're going to get back into our conversation about the therapeutic methods and so forth. Have you ever been asked to contact someone, and maybe this was not intentional, it was just an oversight on their part because they weren't 100% certain that the person had passed who hadn't? I mean, if that's what you're trying to do, is communicate with those who have gone on, and they haven't gone on, they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
Ergo,
well, in a way, they are. In a way, they are. Because Well, first of all, if they've passed on, I usually can access them.
Okay.
And I can usually get information for the person. But even if they're alive, I am able to tune into them and who they are and what they're thinking, what their life is about, and give that. So I may have to say, I don't know if they're dead or not,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm getting is, or transitioned, I should say, rather than dead. What I'm getting is a reflection of what I'm picking up because they're still on the planet. But usually when somebody's passed over, they're going to speak differently.
Yeah.
They're going to actually have messages. They're going to say how they died. They're going to say things that are very pertinent and evidentiary to that person who's come to talk to them.
So the clues are all there.
Yeah,
the clues are all there. To let you know that, yes,
exactly. And usually people are coming in not to find out if somebody's dead, but because they love somebody and they want to talk to them again. May I share another example of that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
That's right. Go ahead.
Okay. I had a client come in. I used to practice in Los Angeles before I moved to Santa Barbara in 1994. And this gentleman came in and he was clearly depressed. And he was depressed because in 1967, he had allowed his son, who was in medical school, to go off to fight in the Six-Day War in Israel.
Hmm.
He allowed him to go, and the boy was killed. And the man had never forgiven himself for allowing his American son and his zeal and patriotism for his people to go there and get killed. And this man had been depressed ever since. And this has been 20 years.
Wow.
So I didn't know if I could still reach his son. Maybe his son's transitioned. Maybe his son's gone into another body. Maybe his son's not available. So I gave it a try. And the first thing that I heard was, we were not supposed to take that hill. Our sergeant did not listen to what was supposed to happen. He went on his own volition and took us on that hill, and we were killed. And the man literally jumped out of his chair and said, that's true. That's exactly what happened. Then I proceeded to get information from the son about what he was doing and that his father needed to forgive himself and that it was the way it was meant to happen.
Mm.
And I won't go into any more of it because, frankly, I don't remember it. It's been a while. But the gist of it was that this guy walked out with a load of sorrow that he had carried for 20 years that was gone.
To me, that is an amazing thing that we will carry these kinds of things literally for a lifetime.
Or lifetimes.
Multiple lifetimes, exactly.
Lifetimes, yeah.
When in fact, it seems like it's such a simple, simple process to put it down, to let it go, not to have to carry it anymore, not to carry that weight anymore. And I think about this when I'm walking the streets of State Street, for example, and I see some of the elderly people that are hunched over. And I think, what kind of burden have they been carrying? Because as I'm sure you and I would agree, the mental and emotional state that we are in throughout our lives will manifest in the physical body. And if you wind up being hunched over, which I swore and still to this day swear that I will not allow myself to do. I do not want to become one of those old guys that is looking at the ground all the time and can't even look up because he's bent over, he's hunched over.
Mm-hmm.
I want to let that stuff go. So let's talk about how we can do that. Now, you talked about this.
Well, you have to heal it. You can't just, I mean, you can say you're releasing it, but if you still have parts of you that are holding that wounding that you may not even be conscious of.
Right.
You know, you may have wounding from birth.
Right.
You know, you may have birth trauma. You may have pre-birth trauma that you don't even know about. You know, so you can say that you want to release it, but my perspective is you want to heal it. You want to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like putting a Band-Aid over a wound.
Right.
You know, and saying,
right.
Well, I'm not going to look at it anymore. You have to heal the wound.
Right.
So
right.
It's about not just letting it go. It's about healing it for me.
And one of those processes that you use to heal it is this transpersonal therapy
right,
that you're
right,
talking about?
Right. And the way that works, just breaking it down so it's not just a catchphrase, is I'm able to work with a client to find out where that original trauma got created, what that part of them actually needed, and then work with what's called cognitive restructuring, imagery restructuring, to change that inner world so that there's a different experience of it. And by doing that, then they're able to let it go because they literally have cleared it. They've cleared it. Now, that's working with the inner child, but you can also work with EFT,
yeah.
You know, energy field therapy, where simply tapping will clear that energy from your system and you
yeah.
don't have to go into history. You know, you simply have to use that method of tapping. Yeah. Bam, it's gone.
Yeah. However, there is a catch to the tapping.
Oh?
Yes. The catch
Tell
is...
Tell me the catch. What's the catch,
the
Richard?
Catch is that when you have released
mm-hmm.
that layer,
yes,
there's another layer.
Oh, yes.
And another layer.
Oh, yeah.
And another layer.
Well, I don't know about how many layers there are, but yes.
But it's like an onion.
Exactly. That's exactly the symbology I would use.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing is you're releasing the surface emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
mm-hmm.
it clears the whole thing, but maybe it takes you to the next level.
Yeah.
Then you use the tapping on the next level.
Yeah.
Then you go down another level, and you use the tapping yeah. on that level until you get down to going through and clearing all of that. What's on the other side of that? Is great clarity and peace.
Mm.
My imagery, you have going peeling the onion, and I do use that, but I also visualize it as having a deep well that needs filling.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep filling it with all kinds of other stuff
yes.
that we really don't need.
Yeah.
And it's not until we actually fill it with what we need that we come to the surface and we can see the world as it is today. We're no longer what's called abreacting or seeing through the lens of the past.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And the difference there is, as I've heard it phrased, the difference is reacting to the past, you're reacting
That's
again,
right.
you're acting again and again
exactly.
the same way,
exactly.
or you are now acting, drop
right.
the RE,
yeah.
you've changed to now, this is a whole new experience for me.
Exactly.
Wow, this is wonderful. And
well,
and,
you're in the moment.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
in the moment. So what I use as an example when I'm working with clients is you have a reaction to something. Okay. If your reaction seems to you to be out of proportion, you're angrier than maybe even you would say you should be,
yeah.
or you're more fearful than you should be, chances are you've got old stuff attached to it.
Yeah.
We use a process called cognitive restructuring where we go in and change that original trauma.
Mm-hmm.
We have it come out in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the person comes back to the current moment, if you would say that they had an upset that was at 10 in terms of a charge, maybe that reaction now is a 3. And that 3 is congruent to the present moment. And they've cleared the 7 that's attached to the past.
Yeah.
And not only cleared it for the moment, but reprogrammed, if you will, the computer inside to spit out a different reality.
Hmm.
So you're not continually reacting from an old piece of programming. What you're doing is you literally are reprogramming yourself. So you don't have that charge the next time something happens.
So the event happened. We can't change the fact that thus and such happened.
That's right.
And it reminds me of, I'm not thinking of one specific television program or movie, but it reminds me of certain movies that have come out in the last 5 or 10 years
yeah.
that will replay an event throughout the movie a number of times, but from different perspectives.
Exactly.
And it's like when you see it the first time, you think, wow, oh my gosh, that's just horrific. And how could this happen? And then as you see each different perspective, you're getting a little more information. And it's like that that phrase that 10 people can see a traffic accident and you'll get 10 different
views of it.
Views of it.
Yeah, they all have their own filters through which they
see. But when you put those together, you get the picture. And so it sounds to me like that's kind of along those lines of looking at the event from a different perspective, different filter, if you will.
It is and it isn't. And because to me, what you're doing is you're saying, I had this experience, and this experience traumatized me, and it made me feel like I have to believe this or act in this way from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Not consciously, but that's the programming.
Yeah.
And when you go in and you say, okay, how would you have liked it to happen differently? Let's have you see it happen the way you wanted it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally are encoding a different reality.
Okay.
And then that acts as the springboard for a different permission, if you will, and how to act in the world.
All right. For example, someone would come up to me as a child. This is now the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I never liked tests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hated tests, but I took them, okay? But the problem was that I superimposed that onto most questions or questioning outside of school, away from actual tests, as tests. And I don't like it when people start questioning me because what I'm hearing is not a curiosity like we do on this program.
Right.
But I'm asking because you have to measure up, because it's got to be done correctly.
Exactly.
And in other words,
and that's a perfect example of how we sort of corrupt our potential for we can healthfully interact with people because old stuff keeps blocking away.
I mean, because I get reactions today when something like that happens, and the look on my face from their perspective is, what's the matter?
Mm-hmm.
You look upset.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I feel like I'm being tested again.
So if I was working with you, I would ask you to go back. I would ask you to think about taking a test.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask you to put a number on it of a charge. When you think of taking a test, is it a zero? There's no charge on it at all? Or what's your number?
Mm-hmm.
So you would come up organically with a number. I wouldn't ask you to try to find the exact number. It's the first thing that comes in your head. Then I'd ask you, when is the first time you remember experiencing this feeling, this intensity? And I would ask you not to try to remember it, but just organically let an image come up.
Right.
And that image would come up of you coming in, maybe you're not prepared, and you're taking this test and you're scared because you're going to fail. Or you have parents who expect a lot of you, so you better do well.
Yeah.
I don't know what the originating trauma was that made being tested uncomfortable. Or when you did well, you didn't get validated, acknowledged. And so it became a joyless thing to just be required to spit information back. I would ask you to change that to a positive experience.
Okay.
So that what would you have liked to have happen differently? That your parents would have been happy with whatever you got.
Mm.
That the teacher would have said you did very well. That the teacher would say, you know, Richard, you need some help and I think you deserve to get it and I'm going to help you to do this. In other words, turn it around to what you actually needed back then.
Yeah.
And once you've internalized that different representation, you're not going to get plugged in anymore.
Yeah.
And I think you take 10 minutes or 20 minutes to do a technique that can change your reactions for the rest of your life. That's what excites me.
Yeah. And I can see that. I can understand why that would excite you. It would excite me as the recipient of of being freed of those things, of being healed, if you will, of that particular aspect.
And sometimes our reactions to things are embarrassing to us.
Yeah.
We react more fearfully, more angrily. We're more passive than we want to be.
Yeah.
We're more aggressive than we want to be. And we don't feel in charge of our lives.
Yeah. And it's like the comments made about my reaction to the question, an innocuous question, you know, they're just gathering information is maybe all they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's the look on my face. And so now when that happens, I'm going, okay, what's the look on my face? I better smile. Make sure you know, it's
clean it up, hide it.
Exactly.
Because it's not congruent. It's not appropriate.
Yeah.
That's the time that you would use the cognitive restructuring exercise. Yeah. Takes you 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'll bring you a copy of it.
I'll take a look. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. This is, to me, this is all extraordinarily fascinating because, again, one of the issues that we have in our world today is that the majority of us, I would think, we're reacting from childhood all the way up through adulthood.
It's
one of the reasons why we have the various, I'll say, levels of conflict that we have in our world today. And
yeah, well, we're all at the effect of what we learn culturally,
yeah,
what we learn traditionally, what we learn in our families. I mean, you can go through the layers of programming, you know. You can have wonderful family,
yeah,
and you go to school and your teacher makes fun of you and it's a searing experience. Do you have a second for me?
Go for it, yes.
In the third grade, my teacher told us, it's Christmas, and you have to go home and tell your parents that you're supposed to bring a present to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So I go home. I said, Mommy, I have to bring a present to the teacher. And my mother says, who says you have to bring a present? The teacher does. Well, you're not bringing her a present. We're not Christian. You don't have to bring a Christmas present. And I thought, oh. So I go to school, right? And I'm sitting there, and the teacher's got all these presents on her desk, and she's serving cake and ice cream.
Mm.
And I'm watching her serve it to everybody else.
Mm? Mm-hmm.
And I say, when everyone has been served, I say, you know, Miss So-and-so, I didn't get any. She said, well, of course you didn't get any. You didn't bring me a present.
Oh, wow.
And to this day, I don't go any place without a present. So those tiny, stupid incidents from uninformed or unhealthy people can traumatize us for the rest of our lives unless we go back and we fix it.
You know, there's a part of me that looks at the children being born today. And it's been a few years since my great niece was born. And I remember the thought that went through my mind as I shared with you earlier about the level of frustration that I experience, and I can only imagine what my father must experience, and he's in his mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been here nearly as long as him, and I'm already at that stage. I was there maybe 10 years ago that this thing ain't working. We need to change this. I want to be a part of changing the world.
Oh, the world.
Changing the way things are so that everybody benefits. So that nobody, you know, the old thing about no child left behind? Mm-hmm. Yeah, every child was left behind on that one. But I don't want to leave anybody behind. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to be able to live to their full potential. And if there was a way for us to bring children into this world today to where they didn't get bombarded by those messages that then you have to deal with, if you will, or facilitate when they become adults. You know what I'm saying?
And thank God.
What a world we would have and how much further along we would be.
But that's been the dream since man and woman were first on this planet. Yeah. Can't we all just get along? Rodney King said it for all of us.
Yes, he did.
And the truth is that, you know, I don't know what the truth is.
Yeah.
I know that I have what would seem to be conflicting beliefs. One, that everything happens the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Two, that we need to take responsibility. We are a brother's keeper. We do have to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
To live our fullest potential, how do we actualize ourselves so that we contribute to the world and make a difference in the world?
Yeah.
Is it a difference like Malala, who got shot in the face and has become world famous?
Or an extraordinary person.
Extraordinary person.
Yeah.
Or is it taking that one starfish and throwing it back in the ocean? Who knows what magnificent changes ripple out from every action that we take?
Yeah.
So we're not always going to be the one who changes the world so that everyone knows it. We may be the person who changes the world for that person, even for ourselves. You know?
But then I have to wonder, those of us who allow ourselves the opportunity to heal from some of those issues, those conditions, those fears, anxieties, and so forth of our past, how much more, even if we were that one who did it in silence, in the dark somewhere to change the world. So what?
We lit the candle.
Yeah.
And until one candle is lit, you can't pass it along to light the next.
Yeah.
So we are responsible for the quality of our own lives because we're constantly models for other people and inspirations for other people.
Yeah.
For good or not.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we just don't know. Yeah. We never know. I know people who, for example, work in the medical field, and I've even made this example, and I say, you don't know who's going to walk through that door, who you are going to treat and care for, who, if you come at them with a positive, cheerful demeanor, and they may have come in just they're coming in feeling terrible. Mm-hmm. That's why they're coming to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And you're at least able to turn their attitude around. Even if you're not curing them that moment, you're giving them that boost of energy that they're going to take into that business meeting that they were going to fire a bunch of people just because they were angry.
It's a ripple effect.
And you've turned that around.
That's right.
You don't know who you've impacted and how you've impacted.
And you don't know the implication of how far out it ripples.
Exactly.
So we have to act as if we make a difference.
Yeah,
and
that's a very good point.
And we have to take responsibility that our actions are going to affect other people, and we may not even know how.
Yeah.
We may not even know how.
And I think that we let go of the need to know and just do it knowing that it's going to ripple. I may not know how, but I'm going to put out the best I can just to see what happens.
And
you know,
the best you can get better. And that's where I come in.
Yeah.
Not people like
that's
me.
That's what I'm talking about.
People like me.
That's what
and
I'm talking about.
And people who are, you know, people who men in the mental health professions, in the medical professions, in the clergy, people who see people and say, let me get you to a place where you're the best you can be so you can go out and inspire other people.
Yeah. Terry Cooper at terrycooper@verizon.net. That's her email address, terrycooper@verizon.net. That's where you can email her. Why don't you give that phone number one more time?
805-682-3025. And if you mention Richard's wonderful show, I will give you an initial 10% discount.
There you go, folks.
Which will go to our Teen Sports Radio show.
Absolutely. Very excited about that program as well. That's on Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. There are other times as well, and you'll want to tune in then to find out more. Before we let you go, however, I have three final questions for you that aren't on your list. That I ask
most of the things you ask me aren't on my list.
But I hope we covered the things that you wanted to.
I hope we covered things that interested people.
That's
and
the
then
key.
It's a success.
There you go. Who is Terry Cooper?
She is a eternal being living in a body, extremely blessed to be living in Santa Barbara. She is a person who loves to help people, who loves to laugh, who loves good food, who loves people.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I am blessed to feel, I really am feeling blessed that the work that I do has helped lots of people. And I continue to do that. And that's a blessing. I'm 72 years old and I still love my work after 30 years. Mm. And I still love making a difference for people. And so I will continue working as long as it feels good. And so far it feels great.
Wonderful. And you may have answered this question in different ways throughout the program. What is your life's purpose?
You know, I know the answer to that.
Aha!
I do. It's to teach people to love themselves and be good to themselves. That is my life's purpose.
That goes back to what you said at the beginning of the program about dealing with the one relationship, the key relationship.
Absolutely.
With yourself.
Absolutely.
Terry Cooper, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program again today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we encourage you to check her, get information about her. Sure, her website will be up, and as soon as it is, we will link to it. In the meantime, make sure you email her, Terry Cooper at verizon.net. And what we'll do is we will put that information on the archives page when it's posted, so that it's there available for you as well. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.